Stephen Vold is in the studio with us. He is a former supervisor at the Navy Fena Treatment Plant, and now he is a teacher at the Astumbo Middle School. But during the break, he was telling me this. All right, we had one more water story. But he was telling me his experiences. You had a job in Connecticut, correct?
Connecticut, a couple states.
I guess I was going to ask you about the most horrifying water story that you could tell in your storied career. I'm not sure if this is the most horrifying, but what is the most bizarre, at least?
It's interesting. First of all, I started out in the water industry in the wastewater treatment side. After I've taken all the training courses and got the highest level certification, I said, well, the logical thing to do is to switch over and become fully certified in the drinking water side.
Mm-hmm.
And same year, I took over as a project manager with a private water company. I get a call on a Sunday night. Steve, the water tastes funny and it smells funny. So I drive to the filter plant. As soon as I open the door, smells minty fresh, like mint-flavored Listerine. And the world...
That was immediately.
It just hit you.
Okay.
Of course, when I got the people from the company that produces Listerine into my plant, they couldn't smell anything.
Okay, there they are, the culprit.
And you always want to protect the public, but you don't want to panic them either. And it just takes a very small amount of eucalyptus oil to give flavor and odor. But we switched to another water source, and I just sat there with my manager all night, hoping Channel 8 wasn't going to show up the next morning. Because of certain individuals in town, the hypersensitive people, the little old ladies that have nothing better to do, were calling.
Oh, sure. Well, because they want their water to taste like water, not eucalyptus oil.
So we had to say, don't tell the teenagers, because alcohol and Listerine.
So is that what? How would it have gone into your water supply?
Through a sewage pipe. The sewage line went right through our aquifer, and it had cracks in it. So when they dumped a batch of Listerine, a small amount leaked out. It was safe because, you know, if any bacteria got out, we got killed by chlorine.
Sure.
But the public relations nightmare
would not be good. Of course. Yes, exactly. And especially since it came down a sewer line.
And then somebody said, well, Steve, you know, you've worked in wastewater for so long, you get paid the same to do water or wastewater treatment. Why did you choose wastewater as predominantly what you do? And I said, because fish don't have phones.
Good point. You don't want to hear it. You don't want to hear it. Well, now you are right there where the fish are biting, I tell you. In the middle school classroom has got to be one of the most challenging places. I have taught the middle school age. I taught English and journalism for a year to a group of 13 and 14-year-old kids. And I have got to say that it was one of the most rewarding experiences of my life. I love that age. Anybody would tell you they're ready to kick their teenagers out at 13 years old. I see what you're saying, but it was a great challenge, and I absolutely loved it. Did you choose that age group yourself?
I remember myself. Middle school is where my knowledge blossomed. You have all the basics of reading, writing, and math, and now your mind can take off into higher levels of learning. And I have 7 kids of my own, so I thought I was bomb.
7 kids of your own?
Yes.
So, boy, you're busy. Okay, that's all right. That's too personal.
And,
but just 7
and
kids.
Yes, I'm Catholic, and yes, we have a TV.
Well, you do belong on Guam. All right. Okay, so that middle age group.
It was more having one teenager go through that 13, 14-year-old stage at a time was a challenge in my own house.
Mm-hmm.
They all kind of rebel a little bit and find themselves.
Yeah, especially in numbers. It's hard. It's almost unlivable. Go ahead.
Then you go to the Guam public school system where you got 30 to 33 kids of that age group in one class.
Yeah.
A total of about 150.
Oh, my God. Is that how many you have? All your classes are.
Yeah, I had 5 classes, about 30 in each class.
Wow.
Luckily, not all of them showed up every day. But.
Tell me about that. Not all of them show up every day. Do you have a high absentee rate?
There's some tourism, and I was teaching up in a lower social economic area, not a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think a lot of the families valued education. What was very depressing is when I gave a test, I had 17 Fs in one class, plus I had a couple 100% papers. A lot of the kids failed to even bother to circle T or F. Multiple choice, 1 out of 4, they can guess. They didn't even want to guess. So I can't imagine, you know, our SAT 10 scores are low here. I think we're in the 40th percentile.
Mm-hmm.
But how much is that because the kids don't even try on the test?
Why is that?
That's what I'm trying to figure out. I went to some seminars. About
you went to this last conference.
Yes.
Was that good for you? Was that great?
Certain seminars are good because give me some more ideas and how to approach things a little differently.
Motivation's a tough thing. It's tough to motivate.
I was self-motivated, but not everybody has it. Some of the kids do not. We had some career day, and we had a probation officer in our class, and he recognized a lot of my students. But a lot of them, when they went around and asked them what do they want to do for a living, you know, some want to be nurses, some want to be doctors or veterinarians or engineers. And I know these kids' test scores. Until they get on the stick, they're not going to make it.
At middle school. At middle school. At what point in the stepping stones does middle school count?
It doesn't really count. School really doesn't count to high school.
Yeah. But you got to get to high school.
But they will socially promote you. So the kids aren't held to a standard of everybody gets passed up.
But so what we're talking about, and you've had experience now for how long? Is it just this one school year?
Yeah.
So you've had like a school year to analyze the breed of student, for one. What about the location? What about where these kids are coming from, district?
One of my papers that I write for my UOG class was how the home environment affects the kids in school. And so I talked to the counselor, and he told me a little background, and then I drove around the area. It's, oh my gosh, if they don't have order and neatness at home, why should I expect it in the classroom?
And so you don't. What do you do with a kid like that? I mean, then you'd be, I mean, then what? What happens to the teaching process? So your environment is disheveled and irresponsible.
It's not fair to the students that want to learn. They don't. They mainstream all the kids nowadays. Back when I went to school, probably when you went to school, we had various tracks, A, B, C. I was always in the upper track classes. They don't do that. They put them all together. So you have kids of varying ability, the theory being that the ones that have more ability will help pull the other ones up.
And the ones that are at a lower standard will what, want to rise to the occasion?
That's the theory. And from my experience, when I talk to educators with 30 years' experience, it doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
And it's not fair to the ones that have the ability and desire to learn. You're dragging down the standard of expectation.
But you're saying that's part of the theory for this Department of Education on Guam, or is that
nationwide? It's pretty widespread, from what I understand. Everything swings. You know, they have different philosophies, and it swings back the old way. You know, you can't paddle kids anymore. Not that I saw many kids get paddled when I was in school, but there was always a possibility. Now, what happens? They can get suspended. That's just extra vacation time
for the kids. Sure. Well, they could also get suspended in school.
They did not do that at my school. So there was no, if you took away the kids' free time, and a 13 or 14-year-old values their time with their friends, that would be a deterrent to correct some behavior.
Okay. That's a brand new school, and you were in there in the first year.
It's a beautiful school.
And do they got it all together? I mean, does the school community have it all together?
Well, as you probably know, teachers have to buy their own paper, make their own photocopies. So every time I gave a test, it was about $20 out of my pocket. I first started teaching, I bought a couple $100 worth of supplies just so I could function. So that's not quite right.
What I'm trying to understand then what you're doing in the schools, you said that you've always wanted to be a teacher, but you've got all of these credentials and probably a salary that commensurates with your experience.
Yeah.
That was really nice working for DZESP.
It was about three times what I make now.
So why the move?
I'm pushing 50 now, and at this stage in life, you look for other things of value in your life besides just money. And teaching children is very rewarding. When I was at the Liberation Day Parade, hi, Mr. Gold, hi, Mr. Gold. You know, that feels good.
Nobody was waving at you when you were the wastewater guy.
No.
You weren't that popular.
There were not too many sewer babes, no.
See, that's what I meant by sexy right there. And so now that you're not credentialed yet as a teacher, you don't have those credentials but you're still in training.
What I have is emergency certification. Basically, I have a BS degree. I took the Praxis 1 basic standardized test that they use throughout the country, and Guam's criteria for their scores isn't any lower than any other state, really. And once you pass that, you get emergency certified to teach anything. And the hope is that you will then take the additional 7 classes at UOG, do your practicum, take the education on Guam course, and then at the end of that, you'll be fully certified. Normally, it's about a 14-month program. Of course, you have to have funding to get that done.
Sure. Did you go through the teacher certification corps or anything?
The Yamashita Educator Corps?
The Educator Corps.
I was selected for the program. The problem is that they didn't tell you about, and I guess it was just an oversight, because everybody here is related and family. When I got down there, 1 of 5 selected to get the funding, I need 2 co-signers with Social Security numbers. That's not easy for a Halley guy, new to Ireland.
You got to be kidding. So, yeah, they had to be local co-signers. They couldn't have co-signers from the mainland or people who knew you?
My sisters aren't going to give their Social Security number to anybody on Guam. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't ask that. It's a little different culture. People from the States, mm-hmm. and I learned this in class also, we're more independent. We take care of ourselves. Now, if I was dying of some disease, I'm sure my family and relatives would kick in. But we're self-sufficient from where I come from.
And around here, the culture is different.
Right. So
saying.
That's why I'm saying they just never thought of that would be a stumbling block.
Yeah,
but I can understand why a politician put that in there so people don't get trained and leave island, and then you don't get the benefit of the training on island.
So you lost out.
I may have to delay getting fully certified because of funding. Not all my assets are liquid right now.
Wow.
So that will be a little disappointing.
I guess it is.
But then I understand that with the economic incentive package coming to Guam, they are going to have a lot of money available to help teachers train your own here. Whether they're going to have some more of those tripping points in the legislation when they get it all said and done, I don't know.
Well, then that leads to kind of an obvious, curious question. If you're having that many obstacles to fulfill this need of yours to do something more valuable than you ever have in your life, mm-hmm. and you come up against these kind of obstacles on Guam, and you're seeing the breed of student that we're trying to develop in a system that's not going to work for them, why here?
I like the water.
Oh God, please.
I scuba dive. I sail down the yacht club.
It's worth it.
It's the quality of life issue. I lived in Florida too.
So you're giving up. You're giving up a lot of stuff. I mean, you're giving up a lot of stuff.
Yeah. Everybody has their own personal motivation.
Okay. I'm pushing 50 in about a week here, so I know exactly what you're talking about. You take this time to sort of regroup and figure out is this exactly when I turn 50? Am I going to be saying to myself, I'm doing exactly everything I wished and I hoped for throughout the past 50 years. It's a huge question, and it pisses me off that I got to think about it so late in life, because you don't ever want to find yourself in a position of going, oh my God, that's not what I wanted to do. It was teaching, and then you got to run up against obstacles in order to fulfill that dream.
It is a little frustrating, and until I was in the system, I criticized, what do you need 300 school aides? Teacher's aides.
Mm.
Now I know why. Because the place would be coming unglued without other people in the hallways to help monitor the students.
But because you have this emergency certification, you can't stay at Istanbul this coming school year.
I need to teach in my science content area, and I'd rather not drive 22 miles north of where I'm living.
And so is that what you're doing? You're going for the science? You want to be a science teacher?
Yes. Well, that's what I have to, because I have a bachelor's of science degree.
Okay, got it.
If I want to teach geography, I got to take a Praxis 2 content area test, which I may do to make myself more valuable.
Yeah, no kidding, because then you could cross.
Yes.
Yeah, cross classes. So where will you be teaching this year?
Well, that's not totally clarified yet. I do have a referral to Audica Johnston, which is right up the road here.
By the dump? How ironic.
I was also a supervisor of a landfill also.
You're killing me. Oh my. So but your expertise is middle school. That is the age group. You're comfortable with this age group.
I don't know if I'd be comfortable. I'll keep my eye on them in every moment.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I would.
Oh my gosh.
Hey, you know what? They're smart now.
Well, they know
they're smarter than I was, honestly. And well, that's not. I'm sorry to use myself as a standard, but I thought I was pretty sly back in the day. Mm-hmm. But these kids are. These guys are. They're savvy. I mean, they got the hustle.
If they can only put it to good use, they have the smarts. They have the drive to know what they want to know. They can work a BlackBerry like nobody's business. They can program. They can work on the computer, program all the electronics. But are they going to study for their test? Probably not.
And you're not even going. You're going to a district that is a pretty large one as well. Guam built Astumbo Middle School only recently. And the rate at which schools will open in to respond to the increasing population, they're not going to go. They're not running. They're not coordinating. They're not working at the same time. DOD, for example, I know DODEA is probably going to have their hands full just opening up their new schools and then needing to plan for more.
I attended a military buildup seminar at the Pacific Educators Conference, and they're talking about DOD having 4,000 more students, going to build 3 elementary schools, 1 middle school, and 1 high school. In addition to what Guam Public Education has in the works right now for schools, they're going to have to build a couple elementary schools, high school, and a middle school, and have to deal with 5,000 more students. So we're talking about 10,000 more students on IELTS.
When you were in that seminar, did they ever broach the possibility of once again going back to integrating the two communities?
I don't think it'll ever happen.
I don't think it'll ever happen either. I mean, not with the kind of money, but would it make sense to you? Do you think that this theory that if you put kids together and put them all in the same sort of standard, that they will one or the other, they'll either rise to the occasion or the smarter ones will start helping the ones that are having a tougher time. Would that work if you integrated a good system like DODEA's in with the public school system?
Let you know what my experience. I'm an Air Force brat. My mom was an Air Force nurse. My dad was an Air Force fighter pilot and engineer. And what happened is we got dumped in a local school which had a large population of military kids. And it was during the Vietnam War, and military wasn't too popular.
Honestly,
back then.
I swear to God, did you grow up with me or something? I came from the same sort of background. And so what did you?
My experience was some of the teachers, which were mostly Democrats, but.
Where are we talking about? What state?
That was like Oklahoma.
Okay.
And you get dumped in the school in the middle of the school year, and the teachers don't want to bother with you. So the military kids maybe are not served as well as they are in their own private military-run schools because of the teachers resent the disruption.
Mm.
But that means
it was a high turnover.
Yeah.
Right back in the day. Well, actually,
I mean, I lived in one place for 3 years.
Yeah. But these tours are a lot shorter now than they used to be.
Mm-hmm.
We were always in some place for about 3 years. The turnover is just real high in the school system, and it's taxing on the local system.
And look what's going to happen in the military buildup. How many kids are just going to be dumped in the school districts? Where are they going to find all the teachers for what they pay? You got to take a motivated person to be here and work in this system.
And they're not all like you.
They criticize, Guam Public School teachers being apathetic, not caring. I had never seen that. But then I'm with the younger group of people, I guess, that are just not into the teaching field. Like at Stumbo, they were all
new teachers.
New teachers. They're still idealistic, super bright. All my fellow students at UOG were super bright, capable. So where are they warehousing these substandard teachers? I haven't seen.
Well, you know, maybe they're also phasing them out, and you might be coming into a new population, a new breed of teacher that will provide the incentive and the motivation that these kids need. Maybe we're on the cusp of something really great. Do you feel like that?
I'm always optimistic.
Oh, me too. Look at you.